C1AN. Number 8A.
Now, I would like to consider now our finding of yesterday of the seven main revisions of science and health with the seven subjects which we have been considering in the text of the final edition, and to see not only the correlation of those two, but perhaps to find some clue how to handle animal magnetism in a more extensive way, more specifically, as it has its suggestions on us. When we do that, I want to be clear that the final edition, as we have seen, goes out from the point of truth and love, always from the point of truth, which says that animal magnetism is only error and a belief and no reality, and from the point of view of love, which shows that as we fill completely our consciousness with reality as such, that excludes the possibility, even the suggestion, of animal magnetism, and really reduces it to nothing. Now, the first edition we have seen had its main object in investigating the power of error, in investigating what we call the metaphysical mystery of error. It was investigating error as if it were something. And this is collaborative to the first subject in our edition, where we have seen that Nisizedi also presents the subject of animal magnetism from the point of view of investigation, that she investigated the so-called force of animal magnetism, she investigated the so-called influence which animal magnetism seems to have on us. She said she made her own observation of the working of animal magnetism and came to conclusions. She drew conclusions from investigation, observation, and testing, and so on. And that her conclusions were that animal magnetism is not really an influential power by itself, but that it is just a power of imagination, a psychological power, therefore, which is not conclusive in favor of the doctrine of animal magnetism, which she says is just the effect of illusion, and its benefit is nothing else but the benefit which we draw from our faith in esoteric magic. So we see the correlation between the first edition and the first subject, really. But in the first subject of our last edition, she handles or investigates animal magnetism already from the point of view of truth and love, as showing that it is by itself only so-called, only a belief, only suppositional, hypothetical, elusive, deceptive, seeming, and that it has no real influence. Well, I always like to take a negative statement like that and put it into the positive. So, if we would handle from the point of view of truth and love that aspect of animal magnetism in the first subject of mind, then we would see, I think, that mind tells us that there is only one basis, one standpoint to go out, and that is the standpoint of God, and never to go out from another basis from outside of God. And therefore, that the only influence there is the influence of mind, divine mind, and that there can therefore be no really existing influence from anything else. That's a point which we have to be quite clear. And I like for myself to think very often And I feel that very few people do that. That they like, that I like to think from the point of view of the Christ as the Word, the Christ's message from God to men, which says, I'm mind and I'm the only influence that is ever going actually, really, continually on every minute of the day. And we should get, instead of getting the feeling that there is some magnetic evil influence constantly around us trying to reach us, we should put that into the positive and go around day in and day out with that feeling that there is only the divine mind that comes to me, that only God, good, comes to me if I will or if I don't want it, if I wish it or don't wish it, if I think of it or don't think of it. That's the fact about the influence of animal magnetism. The fact is that there is an influence, and that influence is the influence of God on me. And so I like to feel as much as I can that it's so wonderful that there is a God that influences me continually. That there is constantly a divine mind that sends all her ideas, its ideas, constantly to me and abides with me. That there is only God, Spirit, good, and that only good comes to me and influences me and abides with me. That only soul, the sinlessness of soul, comes to me constantly as a irresistible force and abides with me. That only the system and harmony of principle is constantly influencing me and comes to me and abides with me. That I'm constantly going around day in and day out under the influence of life that always comes to me as a resuscitating, invigorating, constructive influence that comes to me and abides with me. And that there is only one influence, and that's the influence of truth, and that influence daily in and out constantly comes to me as a healthy, right, and just cause and effect, and comes to me and abides with me and works in me. And that in reality nothing is going on, that only one influence is coming to me, the influence which we call love, divine love, a heavenly blessing. That I am constantly under the flow of heavenly blessing and heavenly benefit, which comes to me and blesses me and abides with me. That's the Christ as the Word standpoint. We have to seek the Word. We have to seek the Word. But the Word is only one side of the Holy City, and we haven't to forget that there is a Christ, and that Christ has an influence. And that's the answer to animal magnetism's first claim, that there is an influence of evil constantly around us and cornering us. We should go around with that wonderful sense that only mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love is constantly influencing us day in and day out, where we are and where we stand and where we go. Then we have handled it from the point of view of mind, but from the high standpoint of truth and love. Now let's see the second edition and the second subject. The second edition was called Mesmerism, and you remember it was a challenge and a warfare between mesmerism and physics, where she showed that these two cannot be mingled, that there is no mingling possible between mesmeric practice and metaphysical practice, and that therefore a mesmerist cannot call himself really a metaphysician, nor vice versa. It was a great confrontation between mesmerism relying on the human mind and animal carnal mind on one side, and on the other side metaphysics relying on the divine mind. The second subject, as we have it today, from a much higher and sublimer standpoint, handles the subject in spirit by confronting again animal magnetism with God, confronting it and showing how different their basis is, and pointing out that only one basis has power and that is and is real, and that only basis is God, and that going out from any other basis can be not real but is a mere negation. Is negating the real, and that's mesmerism and animal magnetism. So the second subject is that subject where we have to handle the claim in duality that two natures in us can be real, that the divine nature derived from God can be something, and that the animal nature derived from life in matter can be real. I have to handle that. Because if we don't handle that duality, then we are able to malpractice in the third stage to the right and left, because we have a dual basis in us. So let's handle the belief that we are a composition of mortality and immortality, that we are composed of animal qualities trying to find spiritual qualities. And so this can only be handled from the point of view of spirit, where we begin to see that there is no negation in me, that nothing can negate the divine qualities of man. And so perhaps we can see that our real being lives and moves and has its being in spiritual quality and attract spiritual quality. And so I like sometimes to sit down and just go over that whole subject from all the seven points of view, to see that only the spiritual qualities in me are real and are me, and that everything else is a mere negation and cannot abide with me and live with me. Therefore, I can always see, or I handle really, that belief of animal magnetism, of that we are composed of animal qualities and spiritual qualities, by being aware that all that is true about me is that I am an idea of mind, and therefore as an idea of mind can only express the qualities of mind, the qualities of intelligence, the qualities of wisdom, the qualities of law-abiding and law-disciplining love, the qualities of activity. And that frees me from the animal quality that any unintelligent, unwise, apathetical, unanalytical, preconceived concept can rule me. Or I can take it, those qualities, I'm always on the point of qualities from the point of view of spirit, and I handle animal magnetism's claim on that animal qualities are real by seeing, oh no, there is only God's spirit and spirit's idea. So man is the idea of spirit, and as the idea of spirit, I live and move and have my being only in spiritual qualities, therefore only in the unfoldment of good, only in the realm and atmosphere where the new birth is going on, where only the fruits of spirit, the fruits of good, the fruits of unfoldment and development and progress are ever going on in me. And that frees me from the belief that anything in me can be real and present and true, which is of animal qualities, which is retrogressive, which is unfruitful, which is frustrating me, which is taking me out of the divine order, out of the line of spirit, that can detract me and deviate me from the straight line of spirit. We have just to be clearly aware of the fact of our inheritance of spiritual qualities. That those qualities I have always inherited the idea of soul, never something of sinfulness. And I must see that, I must be conscious of it. Then I handle the claim of duality. And I see as an idea of soul, I can only express those qualities. qualities of soul, which are perseverance, which are a sense of being definite in one's aim and in one's ambition, in one's purpose of life, in one's career, to be definite and straight and forwardness, that only the quality of integrity is my true quality, and that frees me from the animal qualities of animality in me, temper, of sensitiveness, of which is always sin, of egotism, and so on, all those false animal qualities. I handle in that way that I never live and move in the qualities of sin, and that they can never be harbored within my being. And so as an idea of principle, I see that as an idea of principle, only the qualities of impersonality, of wideness, of having wide vision, of being unrestricted by human classifications, by human opinions, and so on, always living in the infinite calculus of principle, that is my true inheritance. Or as an idea of life, I handle the belief that animal magnetism can work in me in a destructive way by building up a destructive mentality, by building in me up something debasing, something derogatory in me, that all that spirit does as life is that it builds up in me all that rejuvenates, all that refreshes, all that resuscitates, that invigorates, that gives new life, that has new vision, that has new inspiration, that goes along a new way, that finds new vision and so on, and the newness of life is just my true inheritance. I must claim it. And so as an idea of truth, I must claim that I have the right of self-government. That takes away the belief of animal magnetism that a quality of me is that I have to do what others tell me to do, that I'm under the thumb of somebody, under the government of somebody or something or some opinion or anything like that. And so as an idea of love, I can see that only the qualities of gentleness and blessedness and flexibility and adaptability can move me and be me and abide with me. And so you can go widely and freshly and newly through those tones, seeing that spiritual qualities are my inheritance, and that animal qualities certainly are not my inheritance, but I must be conscious of it. Now, let's take the third edition. The third edition had to do all with demonology, with the abuse of power, with the unlicensed cruelty, with the freedom to act from one's own impulsion, with interfering with the rules of metaphysics, and asks us to take the right of our freedom and our liberty and to abide by the rules of metaphysics and to have a clear sense of our moral obligation. That's the tone in it. Well, that's the same tone that she deals now from a higher standpoint in the third subject, where she first shows also the demoniacal aspect, the aggressive, malicious aspect of animal magnetism, where she speaks of the aggressive feature, of the looms of crime, of the secret methods, of the exercise of despotic control, of dishonesty, craftiness, sin, and shows that the remedy for that is the scientific handling of evil. Mankind must learn that evil is no power, that Christian science despoils the kingdom of evil, and so on. And that this cannot be done, she says, through a knowledge of good and evil. And therefore, she shows that the scientific handling of animal, malicious animal magnetism, of secret, hidden, unknown animal magnetism, can only be met by a conscious, definite knowledge of the general truth of being. Well, I think that's the standpoint where we begin to handle animal magnetism from the standpoint of spiritual understanding and spiritual sense. Again, and that only spiritual understanding can handle unknown, unconscious evil and evil intent. That definite spiritual understanding handles the secret evil and liberates us from being susceptible to animal magnetism. See, as long as we are not definitely aware and have a definite spiritual sense and live in a definite spiritual sense, animal magnetism can creep in. Malicious animal magnetism can creep in. So we can also handle this aspect of animal magnetism from the point of view of soul, of the sinlessness of soul, by exchanging the beliefs, the general beliefs of animal magnetism to the general truth of Christian Science. And I think that's usually the standpoint that John Dawley has taken when he has shown how he handles animal magnetism. In most cases where in the verbatim reports or in the talk on Christian Science practice, he shows a handling of evil, be it that he went from mind to love or from love to mind, he seems to have handled it usually from the point of view of soul, from the definiteness of truth versus the nothingness and elusiveness of an evil suggestion. Usually he exchanged an evil suggestion for the truth. He would start, say, with mind and say, because mind is all power and all intelligence and all action and all law and all power, therefore mortal mind has no action, has no power, no intelligence. And if we begin to see that spirit is the only unfoldment, is the only order, has alone a development and evolution and progress, then we are definitely seeing that matter cannot have any true unfoldment, any true development or progress or fruit or birth. And so is soul. And so is with, it would go perhaps to soul and say, because God is soul, I can see that soul is that which alone is sinless and gives me the idea of sinlessness and selfishness and freedom, and shows me how to exchange with soul the belief of animal magnetism that there is any purpose in evil, that evil has any intent, has any definite purpose to accomplish, that helps me to free from that evil intent. See, he always showed the exchanging through what Mrs. Eddy showed in the third subject. Mankind must learn that evil has no power, and he must despoil the kingdom of evil. And that's what he usually has done through the handling of evil, that he has taken a positive and despoiled the negative of those qualities. That he has seen that principle alone is that which has spiritual power, gives harmony, has system and science, and that it alone can govern harmoniously, and that therefore nothing besides God, neither natural science, nor politics, nor nations, nor people, have system with which to govern harmoniously and happily and irresistibly. Or we take the point of view of life, and we must see life is alone the life giver of men, that there is no other life but the one life, and therefore it's not true that there is organic life. Organic life has no reality and no power. Physical life has no reality and no power over men. that the embryonic life cannot bring forth anything good and cannot develop anything which is good and which leads spirit war. And so you can go to truth and exchange the claims of animal magnetism by seeing that the lone truth is health, wholeness. The lone truth is that which gives us the whole idea, the ideal idea, the complete idea of a thing, therefore the complete form of a thing. And that takes away from us that anything else, like medical science or theology or physiology or psychology or any other so-called science, can give us wholeness, can give us health, can give us the form of manhood. It can't. It has no power to do it, no intelligence to do it, no possibility to do it. Or it would take the tone of love as love which always blesses and brings salvation and which always works out the plan of good and design of good and shows that that is the only plan that is being worked out in our life, in our society, in our culture, in our century, in the whole civilization. There's only one plan really at work. And that therefore animal magnetism cannot work out its plan. That it has no chance to succeed to work out its design. Well, take those things, exchange the claims of animal magnetism, despoil them of their kingdom through the positive knowledge of primeval existence. Then we handle it from the point of view of soul. Now let's go to principle. The fourth revision was called also demonology, but there she impersonalized the whole subject by cutting those 46 pages of the third revision down to only 12 pages, cutting out everything that was personal, and showed that demonology was quite an impersonal claim, and that it has nothing to do with people.